Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Get ready. Now.
Hello, I'm Pat Rulo, and thank you for joining me. It is my honor and pleasure to bring this program to you each week with fresh content on a variety of topics that can help keep you safe during every healthcare and hospital encounter. And more importantly, keep you out of the healthcare system. Someone said to me, I know how to survive a hospital stay. Stay out of the hospital. I couldn't agree more. Well, today, my guest is an expert on the health effects of fluoride, and he has science and facts to back up his position. So get ready for that. Let's get started. Because right now, it's time for the healthcare hazard of the week. You've heard me talk about the importance of disconnecting your wireless router, especially in your home, because study after study shows damaging health effects from this type of radiation emitted from computers. And no, mainstream media will not tell you this. The wireless and cellular industry will not tell you this. The supervisory departments within the government, such as the FDA, will not tell you this. And the reasons we know are quite obvious. M-O-N-E-Y. Money. Money drives the bus. And if you and I find out that all of our convenient toys are health hazards, well, there goes the profits and the wheels fall off the money bus. I just purchased an additional computer for my home office. My other computers in the office are all hardwired using an Ethernet cable. This allows the internet access that is much faster, more secure, and best of all, does not use wireless. Therefore, no radiation enters my home via the computer. Now, when the new computer arrived, I plugged it in and turned on my acoustimeter. And that is a handheld meter that detects the radio frequencies given off by such devices. Well, the meter lights lit up and registered numbers similar to sitting under a cell tower. Not good and not safe. I went into the guts of the computer and turned off the wireless function. The computer clearly stated on the screen, wireless off, detects no wireless devices. Then I plugged in my Ethernet cable to access the internet, and still, the acoustimeter lit up like the 4th of July. Interestingly, it only registered in the left-hand corner and directly where the mouse pad is located. Clearly, there is an antenna located there that does not turn off, even when the computer says wireless off. Now, if I didn't have this handy life-saving meter, I would unwittingly believe that I was safe, that no radiation was coming from my computer. Because after all, the words on the computer screen says wireless off. So I have to wonder, why? What is going on here? I'm hoping there is an obvious answer and that I'm just not aware and that I can solve this problem. I'll be calling Dell this week, although I'm positive they won't have a clue. And then next I'll have to take it to some computer wizard to see what they can figure out. Well, the bottom line and my reason for sharing this is radiation emitted from wireless devices is invisible. You don't feel it. You can't smell it or taste it. Yet it is doing silent damage to our bodies, our DNA. Study after study repeats the findings that wireless radiation given off by cell phones, computers, and the like affect our bodies in negative ways. And I don't want to be zapped and fried while thinking I'm safe. And the only way to know what is going on around you in your environment is by having or using a detection meter. Sadly, they are a bit pricey, but could possibly be the best health insurance you may ever purchase. The other alternative is to have someone come to your home or workplace who has these detection meters to do an on-site evaluation for you. And no, this is not an advertisement, but you've heard me talk about the Healthy Home Consultants who will do this for you. I encourage you to take advantage of their ability to help you rid your environment from these dangerous frequencies. And I'll come too to meet you and share what I know about how to rearrange or reconfigure your wireless and electrical devices so that you can live in a healthy home environment. I just don't want you to think you're safe because, like me, you think the wireless device is deactivated. Meantime, you're being bathed in a sea of health damaging frequencies. And once I solve this, I'll keep you posted. Until then, call me and arrange for an in-home consultation. Silent but deadly is not a good thing. Call me right after the show. 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. As I said at the beginning of this conversation, the best way to survive a hospital stay is to stay out of the hospital. Protecting your body from harmful, chronic, daily, and cumulative exposure from radiation in your home is a huge step that you need to take.
I'm here with disturbing news about our favorite gadgets, cell phones, tablets, Wi-Fi, etc. Putting it bluntly, they are damaging the living cells in our bodies and killing many of us prematurely. I'm Dr. Martin Blank from the Department of Physiology and Cellular Biophysics at Columbia University. Before Edison's light bulb, there was very little electromagnetic radiation in our environment. The levels today are very many times higher than natural background levels and are growing rapidly because of all the new devices that emit this radiation. An example that a lot of us have in our pockets right now is the cell phone. One study shows that as cell phone usage has spread widely, the incidence of fatal brain cancer in younger people has more than tripled. We are putting cellular antennas on residential buildings and on top of hospitals where people are trying to get well. Wireless utility meters and cell towers are blanketing our neighborhoods with radiation. Future generations, our children, are at risk. The World Health Organization and international standard-setting bodies are not acting to protect the public's health and well-being. We are really all part of a large biological experiment without our informed consent. To protect our children, ourselves, and our ecosystem, we must reduce exposure by establishing more protective guidelines.
Hot. Bring the heat.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, always bringing you guests with an eye on topics seldom discussed on mainstream media. And today's special guest fits the bill. He is Professor Paul Conant, a graduate of Cambridge University who also holds a PhD in chemistry from Dartmouth College. In May 2006, he retired from his full professorship in chemistry at St. Lawrence University in Canton, New York, where he taught for 23 years and specialized in environmental chemistry and toxicology. Paul has researched the literature on fluoride's toxicity and the fluoridation debate for 18 years, and he helped found the Fluoride Action Network. And you can find them online at fluoridealert.org, O-R-G. Well, there's lots to talk about. So welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you, Pat. Happy to be on it.
Oh, pleasure is all ours. Well, listen, everybody listening has heard about fluoride. It's in our toothpaste. Dentists give us the fluoride rinse. It's in our waters. What is it that causes you to have concern?
It's a very toxic substance, number one. Number two, nature gave her own verdict on this. And I want to make especially stress this, because often the other side will say fluoride is natural, it occurs naturally in some water supplies, it's in the sea, etc. All of which is correct, but misses the point. A function of nature, nature's verdict on whether a baby should get fluoride is the level in mother's milk. And that was the shock for me 18 years ago. Was to find how low the level is in mother's milk. It's 0.004 parts per million. So Basically, that means that today in America, a bottle-fed baby in a fluoridated community, which is most of the communities, will be getting 250 times more fluoride than nature intended. And that, to me, is a reckless thing to do. The whole notion that a group of dentists who have no toxicological training whatsoever know more about what the baby should get than nature herself is absolutely preposterous. Today we find there's not one single biochemical process in the human body that needs fluoride. And yet we do know that there are many processes in the body which are harmed by fluoride.
What a great way to begin this conversation. I've never known that, and I think that's just mind-blowing that, yeah, nature pretty much solves all problems if we pay attention and allow her to do so. And fluoride is the only chemical that I guess I know of that's added to water that doesn't actually treat the water.
That's a very good point, and I would say that's the second most important point, because there are reasons for that. We've never used the public water supply since fluoridation began in 1945. We haven't used this as a precedent to use the public water supply to deliver any other form of human treatment, medical treatment, nothing else. And the reason for that is pretty obvious. Because once you use the public water supply as a delivery system, once you put this chemical in the water, you can't control the dose.
Right.
Because you can't control how much water people drink. You can't control who it goes to, because it goes to every human being, whether they're sick, whether they're poor nourished, whether they're very young, they're very old, and so on and so on and so on. And thirdly, using the water supply like this, you're taking away the individual's right to informed consent to medication. And to put that more starkly, when a community fluoridates, the community is doing to everyone what an individual doctor could do to no one in that community, force them to take medication against their will.
Absolutely. So what you're saying is that the fluoridation can basically add a prescription-strength dose of drug to the water supply, and then we've got this forced mass medication aspect, almost similar to something we talk about all the time, is the forced deployment of smart meters. And as a society, we simply should not be forced to ingest or be bathed in any kind of frequencies against our knowledge or will. So
yes, indeed. In fact, you know, we live in the land of the free, except certain freedoms are very much restricted here in the United States, and we have to question that. So every time you see freedom restricted, but there are many threats to our freedom, I think, here in the United States, which you see with fluoride. I think the whole notion that we can't any longer trust our health agencies on this particular issue, maybe other issues as well, but I think it's very sad and very serious when we now know that organizations like the FDA, the EPA, the CDC are not using honest or the best science on this issue to protect the people, which is what they're supposed to be doing. And we are finding another threat to our freedom is when the press doesn't do a decent job. We don't have many investigative journalists left in the United States, and those that are left very seldom do an in-depth treatment of this issue. We don't get both sides aired with some kind of comprehensiveness. We get the so-called two sides of a story that appears umpteen times in our newspapers. It goes something like this. The Center for Disease Control says that fluoridation is one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. And now we're going to do our journalistic duty and give the other side. Mrs. Clutterbuck down the street thinks it's a bad idea. and from that, now the journalists have satisfied the need to quote from both sides. And we can continue at this ghastly superficial level, which is self-serving. But all of this appeal to authority on the one hand and denigrating opponents on the other hand serves the interest of keeping the public, the media, and decision makers away from the science. Because the science says emphatically that swallowing fluoride does little to reduce tooth decay. They've never done a randomized controlled trial, which is what the FDA requires for any other drug to establish effectiveness. And so that's one of the reasons, because the FDA has never regulated fluoride for ingestion. In all the years of fluoridation, it's never looked at fluoride as another drug to be regulated. It hasn't done its job here. So I'm afraid it's a pretty sad story all the way around.
I want to go back to something you said about the government agencies such as the CDC and the FDA looking out for us. It's sad that most folks don't know that these are really corporations. I mean, they're listed on Dun and Bradstreet, and the only reason why they would be a corporation is for profit reasons. So I think to think going out of the gate that they're going to be looking after our well-being is probably short-sighted. And secondly, you talked about the media. Well, most of the media is corporate-owned. And so again, as you said, we're only going to hear what they want us to hear and not necessarily what science will support.
Let me give you a good example, Pat, because to me this was very illustrative. Shortly after we published our book in October of 2010, I was in New Zealand, and the citizens organized a meeting with the Ministry of Health, which is very pro-fluoridation. I went to give my presentation, their PowerPoint presentation, based upon the book. And anyway, I went through all the arguments in the PowerPoint, carefully documenting everything. And I got to the end. I said, look, we three scientists have done everything that you could expect from opponents of a particular practice. We've made our arguments completely transparent. We've backed up all the science with references to the literature. We've done our job. Now your job. You're an agency that promotes fluoridation. You should be able to take our book and critique it page by page, chapter and chapter, and to demonstrate that we are wrong. And I am expecting a written response to this book.
Oh.
And in 4 years, they produce nothing,
nothing,
nada, nothing, no attempt whatsoever to respond to the arguments in that book. Meanwhile, a few months ago, the Minister of Health, the head of this agency, goes on television and chastises the opponents of fluoridation for misusing the literature. And yet, in his staff, he couldn't muster anybody to give a scientific response to our scientific argument. And that does make you pretty angry after a while.
It makes you angry, and it also begs the question, why? I mean, what drives this community to hold on to this myth? I even saw that you said on your website that the American Dental Association is so concerned about you, apparently, that they deemed it necessary to purchase the domain fluoridealert.com instead of yours.org so that people might mistakenly go to theirs.
That's quietly unethical.
Yeah, I mean, so my question is, what drives the community to hold on to this myth? What is the point?
Well, I think it's a mixture of things. Obviously, there are economic interests involved. There are liabilities involved. Don't forget, the ADA has its seal of approval on all the fluoride dental products. And so if fluoridation falls, it's going to put a question mark on the safety of all these fluoridated dental products. And then when the lawsuits ensue, the dental product manufacturers are going to call upon the ADA or point the finger at the ADA, and they might too have liabilities because of all these endorsement of the products. There are also many industries that use fluoride and expose their workers to fluoride at much higher levels than we get in the water. And they too have concern about liabilities. If fluoridation was to fall, what does it say about the safety of their workers that they've exposed to for much larger quantities of fluoride? So there are economic liabilities involved. There's a different reason that comes in, and it's an old one. It's the fear of bureaucrats to admit they're wrong. It's the notion that policy is king. If you work in a bureaucracy, you don't challenge policy without risking your future. So your job as a bureaucrat is to carry out policy, to promote policy, and if you don't, you're suspect. And in this case, the policy is this long-standing policy going on for 68 years now in the United States. And so you've got this whole chain of command from the Department of Health and Human Services, of which CDC is one part. And by the way, the only people in the CDC involved with fluoridation is the Oral Health Division. And that's only 30 people. And most of those, if they've got any training at all, are dentally trained. No toxicologists, no specialists in medicine. These are the ones who promote fluoridation. And they're out of date with the actual health studies, but their job is to promote it. They have a conflict of interest. So when you hear the CDC says it's one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century, they've been promoting it.
Right.
At least half of the 20th century, their job has been to promote it. So why would they say anything else? So I think their fear that the public health community, which includes, incidentally, the American Public Health Association. Public health is a strange creature compared to individual health practices. If you go to a doctor, he or she chooses the medicine based upon you, your susceptibilities, and he will do a little trial and error. He'll give you a medicine, see if it works, see if you have side effects. He might tinker around with the dose. He may even drop the drug if it doesn't work, and so on. Whereas you've got this public health is indiscriminate. It says this is something we're going to do to everyone. We can't control the dose. We have no oversight of what happens to individuals, and it's all part of the greater good. I mean, they satisfy themselves with the notion that, yes, a few people will be harmed, but the larger number of people will have a benefit. So that works for them. But that's where the individual choice should come in. The individual should make a decision based upon balancing the risks with the benefits. That's an individual decision. It should never be, in my view, a government decision to balance those risks and benefits for you. Anyway, to get back to my point, I think the fear with the public health community is losing the public's trust. If they admit that they've been wrong on fluoridation, which they promoted and waxed lyrical about for decades, if they admit that they're wrong, then I think they fear that they're going to lose the public's trust in other public health practices.
Right, right, right.
And that's when you get to something pretty serious. But if they are defending other public health practices by proxy because they don't want to get this credibility hit, then you get into vaccination. And vaccination is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's clearly collusion between the CDC and the pharmaceutical industry. We have more lobbyists for the pharmaceutical industry in Washington, D.C. than congressmen. And yes, they've got the giveaway there. They've told the vaccine manufacturers remove liability from them. The government takes the liability for these vaccines. So clearly, if they were to say that fluoridation is actually wrong after telling us it's right, then they're fearful that this could sabotage their precious vaccination program. And I don't say that because I'm an opponent of vaccination. I'm not. I question how many vaccines are being given to babies. I certainly question the use of organic mercury. But I'm not out there campaigning against vaccination per se, but I can see it from their perspective. They don't want to have any hits on vaccination. That's big money for them.
Absolutely. I am so glad you brought that up. We've had several segments on vaccines and mandatory vaccines, and
yes.
And it's interesting that you're bringing this connection between fluoride and vaccines. And I've read that there's more people drinking fluoridated water in the United States than the rest of the world, yet there's no difference in tooth decay between Western nations that fluoridate their water and those that do not. So
yep.
What's up with that?
Yeah, that's right. And that's a shock for some people. Instead of the CDC frittering away U.S. taxpayers' money with promotion and propaganda on fluoridation, and all the money that's frittered away on chemicals and engineering to deliver fluoride to the drinking water, put that money into finding what these non-fluoridated countries have done to reduce tooth decay in a safe and cost-effective way.
Right. Logical, logical answer.
Still, the average person out there, when they hear the word fluoride, say, oh, that's good for our teeth. That's good for children. Nothing could be further from the truth. You don't want your children swallowing fluoride. You certainly don't want your babies swallowing fluoride. And to get to the most important issue, we now have 37 studies which show an association between lowered IQ and exposure to fluoride in children. The exposure levels are not that high. I mean, we have studies in China down to levels like between 1.2 or 1.5 parts per million where you're seeing lowered IQ, which leaves no margin of safety if you're swallowing fluoride at between 0.7 and 1.2, as in the United States. So we have a serious problem here. We may be shifting downwards the IQ of the American public. It's every reason to keep fluoride away from the baby. And please, going back to square one, listen to what Mother Nature says. Mom knows best. Mother knows best. Mother Nature did not put much fluoride in mother's milk. It's the height of arrogance to ignore that message from nature, and we're paying the price of it now. So it's a betrayal of the public's trust. I can't underline that enough. This whole thing from top to bottom is a betrayal of the public's trust. And the only people that can break through this, well, we've got a handful of doctors and dentists who are out there publicly. They risk their prestige, they risk their pressure from their peer reviews, and even in some cases being fired. But by and large, as I said before, in the two chains of command, from the ADA down through the dental associations, down to the local district health, dental body, to from the CDC down to the state health department, state dental directors, down to the local district health boards. These are chains of command. Nobody in the middle of the chains of command has the wherewithal to challenge policy. Only the people at the top can challenge policy. Often these are political appointees, and they're not going to give up their cushy jobs in government just because on a whim of conscience or ethics, even if they spent the time to actually review the literature. Yep. There's a lot of people in prestigious bodies, professional bodies, etc., who are not educated because they've allowed their positions to become fossilized. They've lost the ability to entertain new ideas or look at the old ideas in a new way. They're fossilized, and as such, they're pretty useless to us.
Your website is a huge resource. You have all these general rules, and I want to go through a couple. You just say, the more processed a food is, the more fluoride it'll have. We get more fluoride from liquids than solids. Flavored beverages equal fluoridated water. Organic food has significantly less fluoride. Grape beverages equal fluoride pesticide. Processed meats equal more fluoride. So there's just so much information they can gather from your website, which is fluoridealert.org. And I really encourage folks to explore that and find out more.
That we are doing in our new campaign, which is Parents Against Fluoridation. Okay. This is our psychological response to their psychological grip that they have on the American public. The American public's walking around thinking that fluoridation is good for kids, good for teeth. But when anybody hears the name Parents Against Fluoridation, that's the discordance, isn't it?
Yes.
They believe, they've been told, that fluoridation is good for kids. And then they hear Parents Against Fluoridation. It immediately triggers the question, why are parents against fluoridation? The parents' issue more than anything else. You want to protect your kids, and no professional should be forcing our kids to take this stuff, especially when they have very little understanding of the science. I hope that people will come to that conference. I hope that people will consider forming a local chapter of Parents Against Fluoridation. We've got the science, but we need people to open that first page.
Excellent, excellent. I'm going to post some of that on our website if that's all right with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thank you, Paul, for sharing your thoughts today, and I'm betting it's a topic most folks haven't given much thought to. So again, I encourage everyone to visit Paul's website, fluoridealert.org. It's also posted on our website as well.
Pat, and the thing that's going for us, of course, is our independent media folks like yourself. We have, thank God, we need you. We need you. With the press, the mainstream media, not doing its job on issues like this, we need you more and more. So I thank you for having me on your program.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Hi, I'm Pat Rulo, hostess of Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, heard right here every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. Give the gift of summer with a discounted season pass to Pioneer Waterland and Dry Fun Park in Chardon, Ohio. And that includes free parking for the entire season. Family pass for $195. Order your season passes today at pioneerwaterland.com or by phone 440-285-5200. That's 440-285-5200. You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy to spend this hour with you to help you survive any healthcare or hospital encounter. Well, today we're back with our old producer. Oh, no, not that he's old, but I should say our friend, Joe Sweeney, better known as the voice of Fear the Wheelchair.
Oh, you want me to do that?
Let's hear it.
Fear the Wheelchair.
Oh, my gosh, we missed it so much. So, Joe, are you ready to play our newest game?
Yeah, twist my arm.
Twist his arm. What about you, Bobby?
Oh, boy, let's go for it today. Here we go.
And what game is it?
Oh, the game?
Shocking news from around the world.
All right. You think you're ready for this, Joe? Today, it's our busted edition, too.
Busted.
Busted. And by the way, our listeners might recognize that voice as Jeremy, our producer in Phoenix. All right, guys, I'm going to read a statement, and you will decide if what I am saying is a shock, meaning is it true, or is it a crock? Is it not true? So is the statement a shock?
Wow.
Or is it a crock?
Oh.
All right.
Are you ready?
Yes. The shocking news number one, a Swedish anesthesiologist and a nurse were busted.
Busted.
When they went to lunch during a surgical procedure. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
A shock.
Oh, it's definitely a shock.
Well, you are both right. It is a shock.
Wow.
Here's the story. A 72-year-old man was having a tumor removed and had gone under anesthesia at 10:45 in the morning. The head anesthesiologist then left at noon for lunch, followed by the head nurse 15 minutes later. While they were gone, no replacement anesthesiologist took over. Another nurse was called in, but she was unfamiliar with the respirator, and the replacement nurse desperately tried to find the anesthesiologist at 1 o'clock when the man's condition became critical. They finally returned after lunch and found that his respirator had been turned off, depriving him of oxygen for 8 minutes. They tried to resuscitate him but could not revive him. So due to lack of oxygen, the man suffered severe brain damage and died. Like, what do you guys think of this?
I think that's ridiculous. What do you think, Joe?
I say I'll have the pastrami. Hold the gas, please.
I love it.
I bet that's what she said.
Busted.
The bottom line is this points to the need, though, to have a conversation with your anesthesiologist prior to surgery and ask that question. Say, you know what? I want to make sure that you are going to be with me the entire time. It's really shocking that you'd even have to talk about this, but hey, you also probably want to make sure your doctors have snacks with them so they don't leave the room.
Oh, I'd say yes, true.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. All right, guys, the Speak Up and Stay Alive shocking news number two. A Walmart in Kentucky has been busted.
Busted.
For a bit of funny business in the bakery department after a shopper caught her local store slapping new stickers on an expired box of donuts. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I'm going to say that's definitely a shock.
I have to agree. Yeah.
You think so, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you're right. It is a shock.
Wow.
It's true. Someone posted a series of pictures online that showed a box of glazed donuts that had their expiration date was over, and they simply slapped it with a new sticker and kept it on the shelf. Well, this person peeled back the stickers, and they found that a sticker with an April 2nd expiration date had been covered with the date that said April 1st, and then another one that showed that the donuts had actually expired sometime in March.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
I don't think I want to eat donuts. What about you, Joe?
No, I'm done.
All right. Well, hey, one way to avoid the healthcare system is to stay away from this bad food. Actually, it's not even food, you know. Think about what those donuts are, sugar, oils, and fats, and apparently stale oils and fats, right?
But they taste good.
Oh, gosh. Guys. All right. The Speak Up and Stay Alive shocking news number three. Primary care physicians are being busted.
Busted.
For not suggesting that those over the age of 50 have routine vitamin D blood tests to look for a deficiency. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I say a crock.
I'm thinking maybe a crock too.
You guys are good.
Aww.
You're right. It is right. It's a crock. It's not true. In fact, vitamin D testing is generally unnecessary according to the American Society for Clinical Pathology, because over-the-counter vitamin D supplements and summer sun exposure are sufficient for most healthy people. Laboratory testing is appropriate in higher-risk patients, those who are obese. Are either of you obese?
Not really.
Joe?
I think I am, actually.
You are not obese. Or have chronic kidney disease, for example, and is considered one of many tests that are highly unnecessary. And as I recall, didn't you have this test, Bob? It's pretty expensive.
Yeah, because it cost me $548.
All right.
You learned that quickly. Wow.
It was a real fast learning curve.
Exactly. Just go stand out in the sun and don't worry about it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, guys, the Speak Up and Stay Alive shocking news number four. A CVS pharmacy in New Jersey was busted.
Busted.
For mistakenly giving children a breast cancer treatment medication instead of the prescribed fluoride. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
That is definitely a shock.
It's a shock to me.
Yeah? You think it's a shock?
I think it's a shock.
Wow!
It is true. Ugh. It's sadly true. The pharmacy has acknowledged improperly dispensing tamoxifen instead of a chewable fluoride tablet to children in as many as 50 families. Fluoride is usually prescribed by dentists for children, while tamoxifen is used to treat breast cancer and blocks the female hormone estrogen. And here's something I just love. A pharmaceutical expert says the children won't likely suffer any health problems, fortunately, because it's very unlikely that the specific drug would cause any serious or adverse effects when only used for a short period of time.
Huh.
I mean...
Really?
You know, once again, just like the overuse of antibiotics, these kids aren't going to fall over immediately. But come on, no one really knows how much female hormone a little child can safely take without adverse effects maybe years down the line, huh?
Yeah, that's for sure.
So what's the takeaway, Joe?
The takeaway.
Yeah, what do we learn from this?
Stay home. Don't do anything.
Stay home and don't do anything, folks. Well, that's probably not a bad piece of advice. Actually, I think the takeaway is this. Always check your prescriptions before you take them. Go online, look for pictures, compare, double check with your pharmacist. Don't just take it and eat it, right?
You got it.
All right, guys. All right, the Speak Up and Stay Alive shocking news number 5. A UK hospital was busted.
Busted.
For discharging an elderly woman from the hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning in the winter wearing only a nightie.
I think I read about that. I'm going to say that's shocking.
It's shocking regardless if it's a crock or not. So.
It's just a shocking question.
It's a shocking crock is what it is.
Shocking crock. There you go.
It's a shocking crock. It is a shock.
Wow.
This lady had been treated for a leg injury on New Year's Day, and not only did the hospital discharge her at such an unearthly hour at night, but they also let her find her own way home, clad only in a thin nightgown. And here's what the woman told the BBC News. She said, "I was in my nightie and dressing gown. I didn't even have my handbag, and it never occurred to me that they would keep me in for the night. I'm not criticizing the medical staff, just the system." I'm like, what do you think of that? Sounds like the discharge staff didn't have the sense God gave a good goose, right?
Well, if you want to say it that way, that's a good old Southern statement.
I learned that from you.
You learned it from me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So weird.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, guys. Lots of weirdness out there, and I didn't want to just keep it to myself. So thank you both for playing the busted version of...
Shocking news from around the world.
You guys, you're the best. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
Oh, you're welcome.
And listeners, don't go anywhere. There's so much more you can learn about healthcare and hospital safety on America's favorite radio show, Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio.
Busted.
Do you or a loved one need to rehabilitate after a hospital stay and don't know where to go? With so many choices, how do you safely choose? Well, I have the answer. The Welsh Home, located in Rocky River, Ohio. Let's spend the next 2 minutes with Lauren Teschner to get some advice. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Lauren, how does the Welsh Home help patients transition back home?
We establish goals on day one of them admitting to the Welsh Home and make sure that they can reach those goals before they go home. And we do that through physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, nursing needs, and also the social work piece of it. We have a social worker on staff who's going to make sure that the patient is safe to go home, make sure that they have all the equipment in their home that they're going to need once they return home, and make sure that it's going to be a successful transition. We would never want to transition someone back to their home that we knew was not going to succeed. So we want to make sure that we do our best to accomplish their goals for a safe return home.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
You're welcome.
The Welsh Home offers state-of-the-art skilled rehabilitation therapy on site to meet the individual needs of each and every resident. Whether you are looking for short-term or long-term care, the Welsh Home can help. And you don't have to be Welsh to call the Welsh Home your home. Call them to arrange for a tour. 440-331-0420. That's 440-331-0420. Or visit welshhome.com.
Is the patient portal a healthcare babysitter? Research on diagnostic mistakes suggests that most diagnoses that occur in primary care practice are related to the basic elements of the office visit. 8 in 10 misdiagnoses were due in part to problems in the patient encounter, such as errors during the physical exam or medical history taking. 1 in 5 mistakes was related to referrals, such as a decision not to consult an appropriate expert. Poor test result follow-up and tracking contributed to 15% of missed diagnoses, and 14% of the mistakes involved other testing mix-ups, such as misinterpretations, or the mistaken belief that the result was not serious enough to warrant hospital admission or further investigation. According to a report in the BMJ Quality and Safety Journal, and this is important, each year in the United States, approximately 12 million adults or, get this, 1 out of 20 patients who seek outpatient medical care are misdiagnosed in a way that could cause severe harm. These alarming statistics are further reinforced by a new study from the Institute of Medicine that was published just this past September that predicts, in quote, most people will experience at least one diagnostic error, an inaccurate or delayed diagnosis in their lifetime, sometimes with devastating consequences, unquote. Well, what does this say about the current level of patient care in the United States? It says that everyone, physicians, patients, family members, need to pay more attention to what is going on. It says that we as patients tolerate a healthcare system where we often do not experience full disclosure from our doctors. It says that our system does not encourage collaboration and communication between doctors and patients. And it says that each of us will face a potentially life-threatening situation over the course of our healthcare lives that could be addressed and reversed if we paid attention. The current system is poorly designed to support an accurate diagnosis because our doctors are limited by the time they are allowed to spend with us. So as a result, some do not always follow up with tests and procedures that they have ordered. And I just had that happen. Remember a few weeks ago when I recounted a great patient experience? Clean waiting room chairs, on-time appointment, and attentive physician? Well, that disappeared when now, 3 weeks later, I still haven't heard back from him with my test results. But I did hear back from the babysitter, the patient portal. The patient portal is a hopefully secure online website that gives patients the convenience of 24-hour access to personal health information from anywhere with an internet connection. Using a username and a password, patients can view their health information online. To ensure faster feedback, according to government guidelines, lab results must be posted in the patient portal within 96 hours of the doctor's office receiving them, whether your doctor has seen the results or not. The benefits are, it eliminates the practice that some doctors have of notifying you only if something is wrong, or just leaving you with a very vague, everything looks good. For the most part, seeing the actual values and numbers and words is empowering, but there is a chance that misunderstanding the results could cause you to worry. Which brings me to today's question. Is the patient portal a healthcare babysitter? Well, we know that a babysitter is a person engaged to care for children when the parents are not home. Is the patient portal technology not engaged to care for patients when the doctor is too busy? Does the patient portal take the place of an actual personal follow-up? Am I to really understand all that I read on my patient portal? Is the patient portal some kind of a babysitter set up to excuse the doctor of any further conversation? I mean, I thought it was all about accessing my information and empowering me as the patient. Well, here's why I ask. A day after the ultrasound on my thyroid, I received an email that said, "Your test results are in. Log on to the internet to the patient portal," which I did. Luckily, I practice what I preach because I have copies of my previous results so I could compare. And what I found is that the thyroid nodules are getting a bit bigger. Big enough to biopsy? Big enough to worry about? Growing at a safe pace? Or should I be concerned? Well, I don't know, because here's all I know. The test results say. The right thyroid lobe is 5x1x3x1x4 cm. There is a small 2 mm cystic area in the midpole and another in the superior pole. There is a 4 mm hypoechoic nodule in the isthmus on the right side. The isthmus measures 1.4 millimeters in thickness. The left lobe of the thyroid is 4.6 times 1.3 times 1.4 centimeters. There is a 1 millimeter mid to superior nodule and a 2 millimeter inferior pole nodule. Incidentally noted is a 2.1 times 0.4 times 0.9 centimeter lymph node adjacent to the lateral right thyroid lobe. Whew. Am I in trouble? Who knows? Because no one has followed up. So that is why I ask the question, is the patient portal a healthcare babysitter? Well, with the frightening statistic I gave you at the beginning of this conversation, that 1 out of 20 patients who seek outpatient medical care are misdiagnosed in a way that can cause severe harm, I would think that follow-up by a live human being communicated in such a way that the patient has full understanding of the results should be mandatory. Diagnostic errors are often incredibly harmful, as they may lead to delays in treatment, lack of treatment, inappropriate or unnecessary treatment, all of which can have physical, psychological, and financial consequences. So what can you do to protect yourself, especially from the patient portal and test results that go without personal follow-up? Well, first, be proactive. Use all available resources to learn everything you can about your health, your condition, your tests and procedures and medications. Sadly, we must be our own doctors. And here's an important one. Never assume that no news is good news when you have not received the results of a test or procedure. Make sure you are diligent, like a dog with a bone, about receiving the results and discussing them in detail with your doctor. And if your doctor doesn't call you, don't allow the patient portal to be a babysitter. Call him or her, email, whatever. But be sure that they have seen the results and can communicate exactly what the results mean to your future health. And finally, be informed and involved in all health decisions. I don't know about you, but I'm too old and too wise to need a babysitter. I don't want dazzling technology. I want a physician who is as engaged as I am. I guess I have to keep looking.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7. You're listening to the hottest.
SpeakUpAndStayAlive.com. That's SpeakUpAndStayAlive.com.
You found the best when it comes to patient safety. This is Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, also author of the book Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, listed on the United States Army Medical Department website as a top reading choice. And you can have your very own signed copy, too. And for the next 10 folks who order the book, I'll include a free CD. That's right, a free patient experience CD with about 1 hour and 40 minutes of patient safety snippets from past shows and guests that you can listen to in the car or give to a friend. So order right after the show. $20 sends you the book and the free CD, and proceeds fund the Military Pillowcase Project. Visit the website, speakupandstayalive.com, or you can call me, 440-725-5462. That's my gift to you, to thank you for tuning in. That's 440-725-5462. Well, today we learned quite a bit about the mandatory fluoridation of our drinking water and heard the opinion of Dr. Paul Conant, an obvious passionate proponent in favor of free choice and informed consent. Be sure to visit his website, fluoridealert.org. And come back next week. Be sure to set your alarms, tie strings around your fingers, and join us next week. Same time, same place, but never the same information. Until next week, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo. and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Is your home stressing you out? Are your appliances and gadgets damaging your health? Are you concerned that modern technology could be ruining your and your family's health? Scientific evidence suggests that everyday chronic low-intensity magnetic field exposure poses a possible health risk. Therefore, the conclusion is that magnetic fields remain classified as possibly carcinogenic, meaning they can cause cancer. And what about the radiation levels from wireless computers, routers, cordless phones, baby monitors? So I'm suggesting that you have a healthy home consultation to identify problem areas in your home. The folks at Healthy Home will test the EMF levels in your home using small, specialized equipment, focusing particularly on areas of the home where you spend most time. And then we'll make recommendations about how you can reduce your exposure and minimize the effects on your health. It takes about an hour, and you will be given a comprehensive report that includes full recommendations on how to reduce the negative impacts of EMFs and turn your home into a healthy, healing, and safe environment. Schedule a Healthy Home consultation today, and I'll come too to meet you and share what I know about healthy homes. Call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And remember, a healthy home is a happy home.